Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Summit and Cuyahoga counties on Monday reached a $260 million settlement with three opioid distributors and a key drug maker just hours before a landmark trial was to begin in Cleveland. We're talking about the settlement, what it means for the thousands of other cities and states that have filed similar lawsuits over the roles of distributors and drug makers in the opioid epidemic. And we'll compare and contrast the master settlement agreement with tobacco manufacturers in the 1990s. Nick Castile is a reporter for WCPN Idea Stream in Cleveland. He's been covering the story there. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, what were the issues in the settlement that stalled it last week?
Well, what was explained, at least by the county executive of Cuyahoga County, was that there were discussions last week of a possible what's called a global settlement that would have basically taken care of all of the claims against drug companies brought by local governments across the country and state attorneys general. Four state AGs, which does not include Ohio, had presented what they said was a possible deal with drug companies worth about $48 billion, which included about $18 to $22 billion in cash. They were trying to get other local governments and states on board. According to the Cuyahoga County executive, the plaintiffs in this local government lawsuit were not interested. They didn't think it was enough money, and so that deal just did not have the support it needed to get done. In the hours before trial, then on Monday, we get news then that a deal had been reached, not for a global settlement, but just in the claims brought by Cuyahoga and Summit counties against the drug companies.
What are the implications for just the settlement, the $260 million settlement for Summit and Cuyahoga? What are the implications of that for the 2,000 plus 20, whatever it is, 2,400 or whatever, or cities and counties that didn't participate in the settlement?
Yeah, the number keeps growing.
Yeah,
it was 2,300. Now people are saying 2,400. I believe the plaintiffs have their count goes up to 2,700.
Exactly.
Now.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's the point of this. It's called multi-district litigation. So you've got all of these local governments all over the country as they sue the drug companies. Their lawsuits get basically thrown on the pile here. That's been piling up in federal court in Cleveland. This trial, where Cuyahoga and Summit counties were going to be the plaintiffs, was supposed to be the bellwether trial. This was the test case that would have given the rest of the parties an idea of what liability the drug companies might have, what claims would be convincing to a jury, what claims would not be convincing to a jury. So this really would have given them an idea of where their cases might go. So without this trial, we don't have that bellwether. The question will be the fact that these companies decided to settle rather than go to trial. Does this give us any indication that they are willing to settle with the thousands of other local governments who have got claims? No global settlement has yet been reached and announced. We've got these four state AGs who are shopping around their proposal now, trying to win support from other people who have sued drug companies on behalf of state and local governments. But right now, we don't have another global settlement that really would bring money to all of these other local communities that are suing.
We're talking about the $260 million settlement between Summit and Cuyahoga counties with the key drug maker and three distributors. My guest is Nick Castile. He's a reporter for WCPN Idea Stream in Cleveland. He's been covering the issue. Is anybody out there disappointed with this settlement, disappointed that it didn't go to trial so that those kinds of issues about culpability were clarified?
Yeah, NPR has done some reporting on what the plaintiffs' counsels themselves thought about it. I think some of them wanted to go to trial. They certainly put a lot of work into their case, their opening statement. They were ready to go. There was a thinking, I think, all along among folks who were suing the drug industry that this trial would be an attempt or would be an opportunity to, you know, hold drug companies accountable in their opinions and really have a public airing of what, you know, what their case was against the industry. So we don't have that public airing anymore. And you know, I think some folks might be disappointed about that. I think from the local government perspective, Cuyahoga and Summit counties, obviously they took the settlement deal, so they were willing to, you know, to take that deal and get out of trial. I think they would rather see this money come into their communities up front right now in the coming months so that they can spend it toward abating the crisis rather than wait weeks or months or even possibly years going through trial, then going through any appeals that might come out of it. This at least gets them money right now, and they saw that as preferable to waiting for this long legal process to play out.
They were first in line as far as the trial schedule goes. Is there anyone waiting in the bullpen?
Yeah, so there's actually a second trial that could possibly happen next year, also involving Cuyahoga and Summit counties. They do still have some claims outstanding against pharmacies who are being sued, one in their capacity as distributors, but also over dispensing practices. And so that is one case that's still out there. There was a second bellwether trial that's been at least queued up. It doesn't have a start date yet, and that involves some claims in West Virginia by a city and county in West Virginia. So those are the next things that are kind of on the pipeline coming through. All the while, global settlement talks, in theory, are continuing. Mm-hmm. The parties have said they want to keep negotiating this. So it's still at least possible that we will not see those trials come through either as companies work out settlements.
Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, has he talked about what he thinks about a possible global settlement? Is he listening to these other states' attorney general on this issue?
Yeah, you know, he put out a statement shortly after this $48 billion proposal was announced, and I don't have the exact wording, but it was something like, this is not a framework, this is a pile of lumber that's been left at the construction site. He was not convinced that this was really, a fully fleshed out idea. And so he has not endorsed this proposal yet. I think, you know, if you just look at the dollars and cents of it too, Cuyahoga and Summit counties, just two counties, won $260 million in settlements. This other proposal would have been $22 billion for the entire country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it would have probably ended up being a lot less money for local governments than Cuyahoga and Summit won. And I think that's why the local government plaintiffs did not sign on to it. And we've heard from the Attorney General in Ohio, Dave Yost, that he's not too excited about this idea either.
There's a philosophical difference about who should decide how the money is spent. Famously, and we're going to talk about it later in the program with someone who's analyzed it, but the master settlement agreement in the tobacco case back in the 1990s went to the states. They were supposed to divvy it up. They ended up selling bonds on it and spending it and putting it into the general funds in a lot of cases, and ended up spending the last, I think, $170 million or so in Ohio on something unrelated to tobacco. What about that? I mean, is that an issue for local governments too in rejecting larger global settlements?
Yeah, I think the tobacco settlement is certainly on people's minds, and Cuyahoga and Summit, before the trial, tried to at least kind of plant a flag out there in saying that they do have a plan for spending this settlement money, putting it toward abating the opioid epidemic. I think they wanted to make clear before the trial that they were not going to just use this money to patch budget holes, you know, to fill potholes or the proverbial putting a new roof on City Hall. And so at least in Cuyahoga County, you know, the county officials have released a fairly detailed plan for how they plan to spend the first part of the settlement dollars that they received before trial. And they want to put it toward expanding residential treatment beds. They're putting it toward hiring in some county departments that revolve around the opioid crisis. So I think they're trying to send that message that they have a plan and they're not just going to spend this more frivolously.
Has there been any arguments made over time that the counties have had to set aside other priorities to address the opioid crisis, and then that other things have gone undone because of it?
Well, I think that, you know, folks had made arguments before that any time, you know, a fire truck or an ambulance is driving out to respond to an overdose mm-hmm. is time that they're not spending responding to something else. And there's always that opportunity cost mm-hmm. in, you know, having to devote your time and energy to this crisis. You know, does that mean that any money would then flow to these other uses or things that are not related to the opioid crisis? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think both counties have been pretty clear that they want this money to go toward, one, addressing the crisis as it exists right now, but also funding programs that aim at preventing future addiction cases as well.
Some of the money is coming in the form of drugs, right, to treat opioid addiction.
Yeah, that's right. So, and this has been a theme throughout some of the settlements that have already come in. Some companies are say that they're going to make some of their drug products available. We don't yet know which specific drugs are going to be offered as part of this latest settlement. Teva Pharmaceutical, which is one of the manufacturers that settled, is going to offer $25 million in product. An attorney for Cuyahoga County told me that that does include recovery drugs. Which specific drugs, I don't know, and mm-hmm. how those will be used and dispensed, we don't know either. That's one of the questions that's still outstanding in all of this settlement talk.
I'm going to be talking to the Assistant Chief of Staff and Public Information Officer for Summit County later in the program, but I'm wondering what you think. I mean, you mentioned that they do have a pretty detailed plan for addressing and how to spend the money. But it also looks like it's going to take a long time. First, they're going to assign a committee of stakeholders to decide who's going to be on the committee to decide how the money's going to be spent. And is there a sense about a timeline?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Summit County's proposal, a little bit different from Cuyahoga County's in that they want to bring these stakeholders together and they say they want their decisions to be informed by data. I'm looking at their, you know, the statement that they've put out right now. I'm not sure that they gave a specific timeline. I think because at the time that this was put out, they didn't know exactly when the settlement money would come in. But that's, you know, that's certainly going to be a question. Both counties have said they want to spend this money quickly because they believe that the crisis is still, you know, in a very critical state right now and it needs that attention. But what about 5 years from now or 10 years from now? What happens when this money runs out? Are the counties going to be able to sustain these programs in the long term if that's what it's going to take to really deal with opiate addiction in the decades to come? I think that's still a question.
Did they bring up how long, how far out they are looking at all of this?
No, you know, in the preparations for trial, the plaintiffs had contracted with an expert witness who looked at a possible abatement plan for Cuyahoga and Summit counties. And that plan looked out as far as, I believe, about 15 years, if not 20 years. And, you know, the expert estimated that it would take billions of dollars to fund an abatement plan for the next two decades for these two counties. So, you know, they at least had that in mind as they were preparing for trial. How long is $260 million going to last, I think, is a different question, though.
The federal judge, Dan Polster, has been behind encouraging all the parties to settle out of court. Do you have a sense that he's going to pursue that tack going forward with these other cases?
I would expect so. I mean, he's been urging these parties to settle since the very beginning. And even when things seemed like they were closing in on a possible settlement in the Friday before trial began, he called the parties into his courtroom and they spent the day in there trying to hash out a settlement agreement. So, I mean, I think he's pretty committed to this idea of getting the parties to settle rather than go through a lengthy trial process. So, you know, we'll have to see whether a global settlement can be crafted that would be palatable to all of these different parties involved who have different needs and different ideas about who should be in charge of spending the money.
Nick Castile, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Nick Castile is a reporter for WCPN Idea Stream in Cleveland. He's been covering the latest on the opioid litigation. The on Monday, a trial was scheduled to decide two of the cases, and it was supposed to be a harbinger for future legal claims. And then there was an 11th-hour settlement among a key drug maker and several distributors with two Ohio counties, Summit and Cuyahoga, that likely will form a template for thousands of others struggling with the cost of opioid addiction across the country. We have more coming up, so stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
How do you turn what you love into a career? On season two of the Rivet podcast from WOSU, hear firsthand from students translating their interests into jobs without college. Listen to This American Graduate Project as we highlight the next generation of workers in the state's top industries of agriculture, insurance, and healthcare. Support for the Rivet podcast series comes from COSI. Subscribe now at wosu.org/rivet, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Summit and Cuyahoga counties on Monday reached a $260 million settlement with three opioid distributors and a key drug maker just hours before a landmark trial was to begin in Cleveland. Talking about the settlement, what it means for the thousands of other cities and states that have filed similar lawsuits over the roles of distributors and drug makers in the opioid epidemic. Right now, we're going to compare and contrast what we know about this settlement with the master settlement agreement with tobacco manufacturers in the 1990s. Corey Davis is the director of the Network for Public Health Law's Harm Reduction Legal Project. He wrote about what opioid litigators can learn from the big tobacco settlement. He joins us by Skype. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
Why is a comparison of these two issues in two sets of litigation useful?
Well, I think it's useful in a couple of ways. I mean, there are some important similarities, and there are also some important differences between the two types of lawsuits. I mean, similarities are obviously you've got a lot of people suing a couple of, a lot of very deep-pocketed companies. I mean, the differences are numerous. There are a lot more plaintiffs in the opioid lawsuits. And also, opioids do have a place in modern medicine. So it's not like we're trying to stop the opioid companies from doing their thing. Whereas, there's a pretty good argument that we don't need tobacco companies at all, that we may have been better off just shutting them down through litigation.
In the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement, the four largest cigarette manufacturers paid 43 states $206 billion during 25 years and then another $9 billion annually thereafter. In general, what do we know about what the states did with this money?
Yeah, well, we know that they didn't do a lot of public health work with that money. I mean, every state was a little bit different. But overall, most of that money did not go to tobacco cessation activities and didn't go to public health activities at all. The majority of that money has gone to things like filling gaps in pension funds, filling potholes, paying police officers, and that sort of thing. States just treated it largely as a windfall and didn't really use it to try to decrease smoking rates.
Do we know if there was ever any justification for how that was handled that way?
Well, one of the big problems was that the settlement agreement itself didn't set any limits on how the money could be spent. So it was up to each individual state to do with it what they wanted. And some of them did do a very good job. There are a couple of states that set up kind of nonprofit foundations that were responsible for handling the money. And a lot of those foundations have done a good job. But the other states were just we're just left to do with the money whatever they wanted. And unfortunately, those legislators often said, well, we have pressing needs now to fund our schools and so on, and just use the money to backfill those needs.
Right. In Ohio, they use the money to build new schools across the state. Is there any – well, I think it was interesting when I read what you wrote last year about comparing and contrasting these things, that probably one of the biggest inhibitors of smoking after the settlement was the price of cigarettes went up to pay for it.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the tobacco settlements, you know, probably the most important things from it were, yeah, those, you know, sort of knock-on effects. The price of cigarettes did go up. Not all of that was due to the settlement agreement, but some of it was. We were also, the litigation was also able to extract certain marketing restrictions on tobacco companies, which may have had some impact. It also funded this thing called the Truth Initiative, which was an educational campaign, one of the few evidence-based educational campaigns that has that's actually been shown to be effective in reducing teen smoking. So it's not that it didn't do anything, but it's been kind of roundly criticized by people, including, you know, myself and my colleagues, for not starting out at the front end to say, you know, the supposed purpose of this litigation was to reduce the harm associated with smoking. So we need to make sure that the money is largely used towards that end. Like I said, because there was no requirement that the money be used in that way, it largely didn't happen.
Do we know why they didn't address that more fully and clarify the goals?
You know, I would love to know the answer to that. Nobody seems to know. I mean, it kind of seems like you had sort of a lowest common denominator impact, where you had 46 states all trying to hammer out an agreement that everybody could sign on to. They were all, you know, everybody had to agree to essentially the same terms, and you just need one state that says, you know, no, we actually would prefer to use this money to make our pension fund solvent, and then, you know, you can't get a sign off. So that's my guess, but I don't know for sure.
You said that the tobacco master settlement agreement reflected the limitation inherent to government-led civil litigation and corresponding agreements. And I'm wondering how so. What would be the alternative?
Well, it depends on what your goals are. So in, you know, I think this is to some extent a difference between the opioid and the tobacco litigation, where at least the alleged first order goal of the tobacco litigation wasn't necessarily to recover money to pay for the effects of smoking related diseases, but was to restrict the activity of tobacco companies to try to get them to stop, you know, addicting a whole new generation of Americans. Whereas the opioid litigation has largely, it seems to me, been discussed as though the main goal is to recover money to help with, you know, treatments and all of the negative impacts that have come from people who have developed opioid use disorder. So it seems like they were at least rhetorically pitched differently. So that means, you know, like I said, you know, nobody needs to be smoking cigarettes. There are legitimate needs for opioids, but nobody needs to be smoking cigarettes. So if your goal is really to stop people from smoking cigarettes, a more effective way to do that is just to pass laws, making it much more difficult for people to access cigarettes, or just ban them directly. But states didn't do that. And it kind of became clear that part of the reason they didn't do that is they realized that the sale of cigarettes could be a big source of revenue and continues to be a big source of revenue. So it's in a sense kind of a devil's bargain with the tobacco companies.
Right. You said that the master settlement agreement actually incentivized the continued sale of cigarettes because the amount of money that the tobacco companies doled out to the states was a function of how many cigarettes were sold.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the tobacco settlement agreement, unlike any of the opioid settlements that I've seen, is perpetual. As long as those tobacco companies exist and are selling cigarettes, every year they write a check to all of the settling states. And those checks continue to be in the hundreds of millions to billions of dollars every year. So the states are not only you know, have a vested interest in the tobacco companies continuing to exist, but also in continuing to ship large numbers of cigarettes because their payments under the settlement are conditioned on those agreements. And a number of states, you know, California is one of the worst offenders here, have actually sold bonds against their future tobacco payments. So they have actually already spent money that has yet to come in. So yeah, it creates this this really perverse incentive for states to actually act, you know, against the best interests of their citizens.
There were some early cases in the tobacco litigation that awarded settlements to individuals, right?
Yeah, I mean, there have been several individuals that have won settlements against tobacco companies, and you know, up to over a decade ago, there were a couple of municipalities that also won settlements against opioid manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. But now that there was the master settlement for tobacco, individuals and individual political subdivisions can't pursue litigation against the tobacco companies?
That's largely correct. I mean, one of the things that the tobacco companies wanted to get out of the master settlement agreement, it is, you know, that's kind of what the term master means, is that we want to settle all of this litigation. We don't want to have to worry about, you know, about other litigation. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't cover everything, but it does make it so that a lot of the, you know, so the states are kind of standing in for others. You know, there's another big difference between the tobacco master settlement agreement and the opioid litigation, which is where the tobacco litigation was between the states. So there were a large number of them, and then there were 46 by the end. But in the opioid litigation, we're talking about something like 2,000, because we're not just talking about states, we're talking about municipalities as well. And I think it remains to be seen whether you can get all of those groups to agree on anything.
Right. I mean, and the lessons learned is that if you give it to the states, there's no guarantee, or unless it's absolutely explicitly written out, that you'd get the kind of compensation, you know, so to pay for the burdens on the local municipalities.
That's right. That's right. And that's one of the things you're hearing from some of the municipalities in the Ohio case and elsewhere, is that we want the money to come directly to our county or our city because we don't trust what the state might do with it. And, you know, they have some reason to be concerned with that. I mean, the first large settlement that we saw with the state level was with Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And they initially won something like $500 million, was recently reduced to around $107 million or something like that. But the attorney general announced that they're going to spend over $100 million of that money building a big addiction research center at the University of Oklahoma, which, you know, I'm sure would be worthwhile, but is not what a lot of people in Oklahoma wanted. They wanted money for treatment. They wanted addiction professionals. They wanted, you know, much more immediate and specific, you know, things to be done with that money. So, like I said, it remains to be seen exactly how that's going to work out.
How was the tobacco money divvied up among, was it 46 states, 43 states? How what was the equation they used?
Well, it's actually quite complicated.
Well, all right. I guess I, as soon as I said that, I'm like, well, duh. So give me a kind of a, can you give me a thumbnail?
Yeah. I mean, so the biggest thing that goes into that equation is the amount of cigarettes that are distributed, that were distributed to those states. So they didn't try to measure tobacco-related harm in any way. It was largely a function of the how many cigarettes from each of the defendant companies were distributed to each of those states.
One of the things that's different, and of course, correct me if I'm wrong, Corey Davis, but that in the tobacco case, there was evidence brought forward. There was testimony and evidence that the tobacco companies knew what they were doing and had studied and knew about the addictive qualities of tobacco and nicotine and all of that, and knew about the harm because they'd studied it. That as it stands, is not going to be the case with the opioid situation, right? If they go into all these agreements before a trial, we may never know to what extent the manufacturers, the distributors, and so forth were involved in any of it.
That's right. That's right. And we'll see. I mean, you know, these large, you know, most litigation never goes to trial. And that's particularly true with these big cases. Trials are very expensive, and you run this risk of, you know, if you're one of the defendants, of having a huge settlement issued against you. So they're likely to settle. Most of the settlements, you know, most time the defendants who are going to settle do so on the condition that they don't admit that they've done anything wrong. And, you know, this is another thing that, you know, kind of comes down to what is the goal of these lawsuits. I mean, if the goal is, you know, at least on a first order, to get money for these counties and cities and states who desperately need, you know, prevention and treatment funds, then maybe that's okay. You know, but there are lots of people who are saying, well, at least for some of these defendants, they did know what they were doing. They were, you know, they were at a minimum, you know, recklessly indifferent to the harm that they were causing. And we would like them to be held personally responsible as individuals, as opposed to as companies. And, you know, maybe some of these people deserve criminal charges. You know, we have lots and lots of, you know, people who are using drugs, who are selling small amounts of drugs on street corners and so on. These people are in jail, and yet these, you know, these pharmaceutical executives are, you know, still living the high life. That is something that I hear all the time. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We're going to continue our conversation. My guest is Corey Davis. He's director of the Network for Public Health Law's Harm Reduction Legal Project. And we're also going to be hearing from the Assistant Chief of Staff and Public Information Officer for Summit County. That's one of the two counties, along with the Cuyahoga, which on Monday reached a $260 million settlement with three opioid distributors and a key drug maker just hours before a landmark trial was to begin in Cleveland. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Summit and Cuyahoga counties on Monday reached a $260 million settlement with three opioid distributors and a key drug maker just hours before a landmark trial was to begin in Cleveland. We're talking about the settlement, what it means for the thousands of other cities and states that have filed similar lawsuits over the roles of distributors and drug makers in the opioid epidemic that continues to kill about 130 people a day in the U.S. Still with us by Skype is the director of the Network for Public Health Law's Harm Reduction Legal Project, Corey Davis. Greta Johnson is the Assistant Chief of Staff and Public Information Officer for Summit County. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Greta, first, can you give us a thumbnail on how the opioid epidemic has affected Summit County?
It's affected every facet of our community. The number of pills that were dumped into our community, especially in 2010 and 2012, were upwards of 40 million pills per year. That's almost 72 pills for every man, woman, and child here in Summit County. So the real addiction issue was put upon us by the pharmaceutical industry. And as you all know, and as your listeners know, that just drove so many of these folks who were suffering with addiction out into the streets looking for heroin and looking for other opioids when they could no longer get the pills that they had become addicted to.
Do you have a sense about, in dollars and cents, what it's cost the county?
I think it's immeasurable in some ways, because when we look at some of what families have lost, what they've invested the loved ones who have died as a result of it. It's hard to put a dollar number on those lives, but certainly we're well into the hundreds of millions of dollars over the last 8 to 10 years.
Summit County Executive Eileen Shapiro said this week that the goal, and I'm quoting, was and still is to bring about behavior change on the part of the opioid makers and distributors and the pharmacies who fueled this crisis in our community. How will the settlement achieve that?
Well, when we began this lawsuit, we really looked at not what we have spent as much as how do we get better. And we've identified some of those ways in which we can get better, and it's treatment. And it is looking at ways we can enhance our detox, our residential, outpatient, recovery housing. The second priority area is harm reduction. That includes syringe exchange, fentanyl test strips, naloxone. Third priority area is system coordination. We need to be able to track our systems within the criminal justice program, data-informed systems, our children's services support. And then our fourth priority area is evidence-based prevention and education. How are we getting the word out, and how are we letting people know the dangers and how to best get help if they need it. And within all four of those is a unified support of both our first responders and the resources that they need as well.
Is there a sense that this is ongoing, that there's not an end time?
Oh, we're still in a state of emergency here in Summit County. This weekend, we had 9 people overdose from opioids. Not all of them died, but this is still crisis center. We are still seeing opioids ravage families all across our community.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about the settlement between Summit and Cuyahoga counties with three drug distributors, opioid distributors, and one opioid maker. You're listening to Gretty Johnson. She's the Assistant Chief of Staff and Public Information Officer for Summit County. Also with us by Skype, Corey Davis, Director of the Network for Public Health Law's Harm Reduction Legal Project. Corey Davis, when you hear this kind of description about what they're going to do with the money, it contrasts significantly with what happened with that master settlement in the tobacco case, does it not?
Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, of course, the devil will be in the details. Mm-hmm. But yes, it would be wonderful if all of the other, you know, recipients of future settlement funds would also commit upfront to spending all of the money, or at least a vast majority of the money, in ways, you know, the evidence-based ways to you know, help people who are currently impacted and to prevent future addiction and misuse of opioids. But, you know, like I said, Will, I don't know the details. I know there's been some discussion of, you know, maybe having that money go into a trust or be, you know, go to some sort of committee that's going to make those decisions. That's something that generally did work well in the tobacco world. But I know that's kind of to be decided, but that does sound, you know, at least generally speaking, like an improvement over how the tobacco settlement funds were generally spent.
Gretty Johnson, what are they talking about in terms of promising this money goes only to the opioid issue in the crisis?
We have no intention to use this money for anything but abating the opioid crisis. The money's being held right now in a fund that's going to sit with our health department. This is not going to balance our budget here at the general fund level. This money is going to be used to help the people in the community who need it most. We heard the direction from the judge loud and clear, and here at the local level, we know that the tobacco settlement funds were not used for what they should have been used for. And so that's one of the reasons we have fought so hard to have these monies come directly to the local communities instead of going through you know, the state legislature or anything else like that. We know what works here in Summit County, and we want to be able to spend the money on what we have seen working directly in our community.
Is there a concern at all, Gretty Johnson, that, all right, so Summit and Cuyahoga counties have cut this deal with the drug maker and the distributors et al., and that when the state does its own settlement, however that may manifest in the future, that Summit County and Cuyahoga County or any political subdivisions in Ohio that's cut a deal on their own or in a potential global settlement will be then cut out of state funding for future needs as they arise?
Well, certainly that's always a concern. We don't want it held against us
right.
that we were successful, which is why we, you know, right now the executive and our chief of staff are in Columbus meeting with the governor and the attorney general to have those discussions. We've never been shy about the fact that we did not want this money to go through the state because, quite frankly, the last decade has shown us that the state administration has not been favorable to local governments and the needs that we have here in urban cores. So, you know, we certainly hope that it would not be held against us, which is why we're doing everything we can to be good partners and work with the state administration at this point on the global settlement in the hopes that all of us can benefit from that.
You know, Corey Davis, Ohio Attorney General David Yost wanted to take over the Ohio-related lawsuits, put them all under the auspices of the Attorney General. From where you sit at the Network for Public Health and the Laws Harm Reduction Legal Project, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, like I said, it's really hard to say. The devil is in the details. We don't know how, you know, what states would do. I mean, it seems we don't know what's going to happen. It definitely cannot be the case that these, you know, the defendants, whoever they may be, are going to settle for $100 million per county. The money does not exist. So it remains to be seen whether it's even logistically possible to reach, you know, separate settlement agreements with each of the approximately 2,000 and growing every week number of individual municipalities. It seems likely to me that at least, you know, future settlements will be more at the state level. Like I said, it's impossible or it's very, very difficult to have a global settlement the 2,000 plus municipalities have to sign off on that's going to have any sort of specifics. I mean, there's no way, in my opinion, that you're going to have a settlement with that many parties that has any sort of specificity to it. Something like that would probably just have some sort of formula for how the money is going to be divided up, and all the details would be devolved. So I think that it's, you know, there's sort of this first mover advantage with mm-hmm. Summit and Cuyahoga counties where they were able to strike this deal and get this autonomy. But I would be surprised if that's the model moving forward.
Greta Johnson, how was the $260 million in cash, I guess, versus the drugs that will be coming from the drug maker, but how was that money split between the two counties? What was that equation?
So the equation that was the agreement that was reached was 38% to Summit County and 62% to Cuyahoga County, and that was based on population.
Okay,
they're just significantly bigger than we are.
Okay, and you know, the first key stakeholders will gather to form the task force that you described, and then the task force will meet to address that litany of goals that you also described. What sort of timeline are you thinking about getting money on the ground?
Well, we have an aggressive timeline. We have already reached some settlements prior to Monday's trial settlement with four other defendants. So we do have some dollars readily available that we intend to look to start investing as early as the end of this year and the beginning of next year. And certainly the product that we negotiated to receive, we want to get that into the hands of our medical providers as soon as possible as well.
As far as a trust fund going forward, forgive me if you've mentioned that already, but is there any sense that in perpetuity this issue will be addressed with these funds?
This is one pot, one shot money. So as far as into perpetuity, I don't know that we actually are going to receive the type of money that would be very meaningful into perpetuity. So we plan to invest wisely. We're certainly going to use the money to abate the problem. And our hope is that we're able to identify ways in which we can make investments that we can then leverage with other funding to ensure success.
And then how does the stakeholders and does the committee that they appoint, where do they go for best practices on this topic? Everything has been so underfunded at this point. What's the goal there? How do you know what to do?
Well, we are actually pretty lucky here in Summit County that we've had some investments from our ADM board as well as the philanthropic community, as well as our office through our criminal justice services. We've done a lot of research here in Summit County. We've done a deep dive on the data on what works and what doesn't. We know medically assisted treatment works. We know that when we are able to provide medication-assisted treatment as soon as someone is asking for help, that the results are just exceedingly better than anywhere else. We know that we have a very strong need for transitional housing. We have identified a couple of other key areas where we know Summit County has success in certain lanes, but those gaps that need to be filled, we've identified those. We've done that through some very intentional data collection, lots of hours spent in rooms with providers, with best practice experts. So we feel confident that we are armed with that information to move it forward.
As far as economies of scale go, the Summits and the Cuyahogas and the Franklins and the Hamilton counties of the world have it over the rural areas, no questions asked. And I'm wondering if there has been thought given to working with more rural counties that don't have those economies of scale to help them with their challenges, which are incredibly significant.
Absolutely. They definitely have the same challenges, but like you said, it's a matter of scale. And make no mistake, a lot of people come to Summit County to get the services we offer here. We recognize that we are in a better position in what we're able to offer, but we don't turn people away because of where they live. We have certainly seen many patients come through the emergency room doors who are seeking help through our First Step program. We've seen people at our Oriana House facilities who are there for help coming from Portage County, coming from Stark County, coming from Medina County. So we are aware and we will be in contact with those other communities to make sure that we're leveraging what we're receiving to benefit all of our community here in Northeast Ohio.
And as far as the drugs coming from the distributor the drug maker for treatment, whatever they turn out to be, do we know how they're going to be divvied up, how they'll be distributed to treatment facilities? Yeah. Will individuals be able to get them to hopefully save their family members or loved ones?
Well, certainly we're going to be sitting down with our hospital systems here in Summit County. We have four, and we want to make sure that the drugs that are on this availability list to us are ones that we use here. And we know for certain that a couple of them are, and some of them are used within our EMTs practice and in the emergency practice. But again, that's going to also come with a conversation with our ADM director and our community health center director to make sure that we're using these medications appropriately and that we are, again, filling the gap rather than supplanting the money that would have been spent on these pills otherwise.
And also, what about, and I apologize, I've forgotten, but as far as taking care of first responders, we've done entire shows on that issue
absolutely.
Alone.
Yeah. I think what we need to look at is not just hiring more or training more. I think we need to take care of the ones we have who have really endured so much responding to these overdose scenes. The compassion fatigue and the trauma that these first responders have incurred as a result of this crisis needs to be addressed. I just overheard, I was listening to the news this morning, we're losing police officers to suicide and firefighters to suicide at a rate that's never been seen before. And we have an obligation to step in and use some of these funds to make sure that the police officers and the firefighters we have are being taken care of and their emotional and mental health is being taken care of as well.
Corey Davis has mentioned a couple times the devil's in the details. Who's going to be monitoring the details over time, Greta Johnson?
Sure. So this the stakeholders who are going to appoint this committee are going to make sure that all of these dollars are being spent on best practices, on folks who have results, and also the judge intends to stay involved in this settlement. He was very clear that these dollars are not going to be spent on anything but abating this issue. So we intend to be able to present that. We intend to be incredibly transparent. These are public dollars, so that they will be able to be tracked, down to the dollar.
And also, do you see Summit County playing a role going forward in helping guide other publics, other political subdivisions in pursuing whatever kinds of, whether it's a global or individual lawsuits?
I think if we can do anything for other communities who want to go down the same path, it's to show them that by working together is why we were able to achieve success. From our ADM, our Children's Services Bureau, our medical examiner, every entity, every agency in the county came together, got in the same boat, rode in the same direction, and that truly is the reason we were able to achieve success. So I think, you know, if you speak to anybody from the Summit County team who did that, they would all echo that, that this was definitely a team lift with the help of really good attorneys.
Greta Johnson, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Greta Johnson, Assistant Chief of Staff and Public Information Officer for Summit County. Also, Corey Davis, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Corey Davis, Director of the Network for Public Health Law's Harm Reduction Legal Project. We've been talking about the settlement with Summit County and Cuyahoga counties with drug maker and distributors in the opioid crisis. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.